Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's Classical Christian Curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
At Planned Parenthood, we refuse to cower to the Trump-Pence administration. We will not be bullied into withholding abortion information from our patients. Our patients deserve to make their own healthcare decisions, not to be forced to have Donald Trump or Mike Pence make those decisions for them.
That's Planned Parenthood's acting president, Alexis McGill-Johnson, responding to questions from National Public Radio about Planned Parenthood's decision to withdraw from Title X funding. How much money was Planned Parenthood actually getting through Title X? And what does this mean, especially state by state, when states are contemplating withholding public money from Planned Parenthood? How does that usually result? The president of Planned Parenthood has said publicly this last week that it will put healthcare in jeopardy for women across the nation. Is that true? Joining us to talk about Planned Parenthood's withdrawal from Title X funding, Dr. Michael New. He's visiting assistant professor at the Catholic University of America, associate scholar at the Charlotte Lozier Institute, and columnist for National Review Online. Dr. New, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks for having me.
Why has Planned Parenthood finally withdrawn as a recipient of Title X money?
Earlier this year, President Trump enacted the Protect Life rule. And what this rule does is it basically states that recipients of Title X grant money, and that's money that goes to contraception and family planning programs, groups that receive that money cannot refer for abortions. And there were some legal challenges which failed, and the rule took effect. And Planned Parenthood, being the country's number one abortion provider, didn't have to abide by those rules. They wanted to do abortion referrals. So given the choice between not doing referrals and keeping the grant money, or being allowed to do abortion referrals and foregoing the grant money, they decided to exclude themselves from the program. Makes it very clear that abortion is what they're all about. They wanted to keep doing abortion referrals, but couldn't legally do so and still continue to receive money from the Title X program.
And how much Title X money was actually going to Planned Parenthood?
Typically, Planned Parenthood gets about $60 million from the Title X program, which is not insignificant, but keep in mind, their annual budget's around $1.6 billion. So it represents about 6% of their money. I mean, they're not going to be starved for cash. It's a good incremental win for pro-lifers, and we can't protect taxpayers. But Planned Parenthood still has resources at their disposal. If they want to fund contraception programs on their own without this grant money, they certainly have the means to do so.
Planned Parenthood's acting president, Alexis McGill-Johnson, is quoted in yesterday's New York Times saying, "When you have an unethical rule that will limit what providers can tell your patients, it becomes really important that we not agree to be in this program." What's your response?
Well, it's not unethical at all. I mean, the rule is clear. I mean, Planned Parenthood employees could still discuss abortion with clients. They just couldn't make referrals. And that was actually the original intent of the Title X program. John McCormick, who writes for National Review Online, had a good article about the history of Title X. And originally, it was designed to separate family planning from abortion. That rule has not been followed all that consistently over the years. I mean, Title X has been around since 1970. But that was kind of the original intent of Title X. The Protect Life rule, which the Trump administration has put in place, kind of reinforces that. But it's not unethical at all. In fact, that was the original intent of the Title X program. It was not meant to do abortion referrals. It was intended to be a grant program to assist folks with either contraception or family planning.
Johnson also elsewhere has predicted a negative impact to health care as a result of the new Title X rule. You say that Texas has actually been a test ground for this kind of policy change. What have we learned from the Texas situation?
Texas is actually a very good situation to learn from. That Texas, actually, back in 2011, they took the lead. They actually pursued a policy similar to what's currently happening at the federal level, where they excluded Planned Parenthood from family planning programs, and funding to Planned Parenthood went down. And a lot of people predicted all kinds of doom and gloom as a result. But if you actually look at what's happened since then, that's not the case. I mean, we actually have data on things like pregnancy rates and abortion rates. And if you look at kind of teen pregnancy rate figures, that's gone down by over 30%. The minor abortion rate figure has gone down by over 40%. Overall, abortions have fallen by 26%. There's really no evidence of any real increase in unintended pregnancies. So again, public health trends are very positive in Texas. Minor abortions, overall abortions, you know, are all going down. Minor pregnancy rates are going down. There's really no evidence of a public health crisis in Texas since Planned Parenthood was defunded, or at least excluded from the family planning program. And again, that shows you could have good public health outcomes without requiring your taxpayers to fund Planned Parenthood to the tune of millions of dollars a year.
Are there any other states that have withdrawn public funds from Planned Parenthood?
Yeah, there's about 18 states that place some limits on either Planned Parenthood specifically or other abortion facilities from receiving certain kinds of grant programs. It doesn't mean they're completely defunded, but they've said that either Planned Parenthood or places that do abortions can't receive certain kinds of grants for health care or for family planning or what have you. I often use Texas because they were the first. They have good health care data. It's also a very diverse state, kind of both geographically, socioeconomically, so there's good data to play with there. But other states have done similar things as well.
What do the polls tell us about support for government-funded abortion?
A variety of polls all consistently show that most Americans oppose taxpayer funding of abortion. That's very consistent no matter how the question's worded. When it's worded as taxpayer funding of abortion, typically we see 50-60% oppose. When it's worded as Medicaid coverage of abortion, support goes down a little bit, but still a plurality. We just had a poll come out last week from the Public Religion Research Institute, which is kind of unique. Most polls only survey a few hundred people. They surveyed 40,000. And they asked about Medicaid coverage of abortion, which, again, is not wording that I would use. But it's also very clearly a plurality of Americans, 48%, oppose this. So, again, most Americans don't want to see their taxpayer dollars being used to fund elective abortions.
What did that poll you mentioned there show us about single-issue abortion voters on both sides of the issue?
You know, one thing that we've known a lot in the pro-life movement and doesn't always get covered much by the mainstream media is there's a real intensity gap on the issue. I mean, a lot of polls show people relatively evenly divided when you ask them, are they pro-life or pro-choice? The pro-lifers tend to be a lot more intense. When you look at single-issue voters, the number or percentage of single-issue pro-life voters consistently exceeds the number of single-issue, quote-unquote, pro-choice single-issue voters. So we look at people who just vote on abortion. There's a lot more pro-life single-issue voters than people who are pro-choice and vote on that issue. So again, there's a real intensity gap there. Support for the quote-unquote pro-choice position is kind of a mile wide but an inch thin. Pro-lifers are a lot more committed and a lot more likely to cast their vote on sanctity of life issues.
Turning to Missouri, an 8-week abortion ban was recently passed. What's the status on that front?
Well, we did get some good news last week. There was some people who support legal abortion, some groups like the ACLU, was interested in doing some kind of a petition drive to put a question on the ballot that would have repealed the law. So they had interest in going around collecting necessary signatures to put a question on the ballot. They announced they're not going to do that. They have discovered that they just don't have time to collect enough signatures. So that bodes well for pro-lifers. It's not we're not out of the woods yet. There's still some litigation involving that law. I think there's going to be a hearing, I think August 26th, toward the end of this month, about the constitution of the law. But the fact that opponents of the law are not going to be putting a question on the ballot does bode well for pro-lifers.
Do you expect the law to go into effect when it's scheduled on the 28th of August?
It's really hard to say. I don't really like making predictions about politics. I mean, the one prediction I make is that people who make predictions often get egg on their face. I will say that courts have not always been sympathetic to these kinds of laws. But that said, regardless of what happens, I think it does send a powerful message. Courts do pay attention to politics. And the fact that you have voters and elected officials in places like Missouri and Alabama and Georgia that are enacting laws that offer kind of really comprehensive protection for unborn children really does send a clear message. Even if this law is not upheld, I think it does pave the way for, I think, future types of laws to be upheld elsewhere.
Dr. Michael New is a visiting assistant professor at the Catholic University of America. He's associate scholar at the Charlotte Lozier Institute, a columnist for National Review Online. You'll find a link to his columns on the On Demand Archives page at issuesetc.org. Dr. New, thank you very much.
No, thanks for having me.
Our series on Lutheran catechesis continues with Pastor Peter Bender right after the break. We'll go back into the Holy Spirit's ministry of love and the third article of the Apostles' Creed.
Church music directors can find a new community at Prelude to Postlude, the CPH music blog. Learn helpful tips for managing music ministry and involving members, and meet the composers of some of your favorite new pieces. Plus, find suggestions of music to use for special services, and preview some of our newest works with free samples you can use at your church. Visit us at preludetopostlude.org.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore. Thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority, they've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. Thecleaningauthority.com.